and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is someone more special than a special guest, Gareth Antle. Hello, Gareth. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be back.
Well, we're really happy to have you back, everyone. Enjoyed your previous episode a lot. And last time we talked about Menoth, and this time we're going to talk about Menoth again.
Awesome.
So for those who did not hear the last episode, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm a War Machine player from Vancouver, BC. I've been playing since about 2011, so gosh, a decade now. I started out with Krix and played them for almost exclusively in Mark II. And then in Mark III, I've been dabbling with a lot of factions. Menoth now I've been playing consistently for almost 3 years, and it's probably the longest I've been playing a faction in, certainly the longest I've been playing a faction in Mark III. And starting to compete with the amount of time I played Krix straight. And the last year has been a hard year for everyone, but also been a really good year in terms of War Machine for me. I ended up right before, at this time last year, right when everything was shutting down, I qualified for the Iron Gauntlet and for War Machine Weekend when I took down the Seattle Open. And more recently, my team played for the top table at the VTC, and unfortunately, we lost. I think we ended up coming fifth through tiebreaks, and it was a great experience, wonderful games. It was my first time at a big international World Team Championship-style event. It was a blast.
All right. Well, to remind everyone of the format, we will talk for about 45, 50 minutes and then continue the conversation in the bonus episode, which will be available for patrons. The new Patreon tier system is now live. If you haven't signed up for that, you can do so. If you're a previous subscriber, you need to pick which of the two new Patreon tiers you back to be able to continue listening to the bonus episodes. And then the new higher tier will have the monthly mini episode with Hungerford, the first of which has already been released. So let's dive into the questions about Menoth. So one second. Okay, here we go. Bennett, first question, right out the bat, the hard-hitting questions. Free initiates, okay or not okay? Does anything else need to change in the theme force for it to be okay?
All right, yeah, that's definitely a hard-hitting question. So I've been dabbling recently, sort of over the winter, playing around with a bunch of other factions. And I feel like initiates as a free option in the Faithful Masses theme force are certainly in the top tier of theme forces and free requisition options. But there is still a tier that they're on with other models like Battle Priests, Regna, Severius, models like that, the super high impact 6 and 7 point free models. So I think that they aren't clearly above those other strong free models. They're a little bit different than them because like a lot of the other models I listed, I think you would agree that they're like support models. They aren't the meat and potatoes of your list. And initiates definitely are. Like, you build your list around your three pods of initiates. Whereas, like, it's nice to have battle priests, but my list doesn't suddenly not work if I don't have them. Whereas if I stopped bringing initiates in a lot of lists, suddenly I don't have any infantry, really. I've got like choir and warjacks and super solos.
I mean, I guess not to say that this is a bad question, but I think there's a deeper question that's a little bit more pertinent. So I feel like, you know, there's this question of like, are they okay as a requisition option? And like you said, there's other things that are requisition things that are fine. I think a little bit of the deeper question, though, is like, should Privateer Press have even like really created something like this, that's FA3, that's at this price point, into the game, period? Because it kind of makes it so that there's a certain play style or certain types of lists that just have a really bad day now because this now exists in the game.
Yeah.
And maybe the answer is that it is okay and that you need to have an off list or whatever. But I guess I'm curious, after having played, some other factions that are not Menoth, do you think that initiates are good for the game and I guess also good for the meta?
So I think my answer to this is probably going to go on for a little while, but it's a really interesting question. So this really comes down to the relationship between like gun lines and anti-gun lines in the meta. And I think the meta right now is in a place where we're in a really, we're sort of in terms of your list archetypes, like you've got on one sort of end of the one side, you've got gun lines, like pure Sloan, Siege, shoot them off the table before they ever close with you gun lines. And on the other side, you've got stuff like bricks, like Miserable Meat Mountains, Animag, double Chosen, the heavy calf whose name is escaping me, Serenia, Harbinger, the stuff that's going to slowly walk across the table and grind you to dust. And in the middle, you've kind of got like combined arms lists. Like, they sort of don't really, I guess, Flames in the Darkness can be built as a combined arms list where you've got like lots of units that fight and shoot, and you've got units that skirmish and units that, like Lost Souls that form a bit more of an anvil to anchor your list. And I think that what we've seen over the last couple of years is that the combined arms lists are slowly being ground out by the two extremes of the list building environment, where you, because it's really hard to be a combined arms list if you need to both shoot effectively into the stuff that can survive shooting and be able to survive shooting from lists that bring more guns than you do.
Right.
And there's a similar idea even with pure melee lists, where like you need to have the units that are strong enough and tough enough to survive getting hit by the stuff that out-threats them, and they need to be able to out-threat a lot of other stuff, out-threat everything that can hit them hard enough. And that leads to the meta getting really, really polarized, where you've got lists, where you've got list pairs like Sloan and Omodemos in Infernals, where like, oh, you're either gonna be running into guns, into the teeth of one of the best gun lines in the game for three turns, and then you'll maybe get there. Or you've got this insane mountain of armor 21 beef that you're going to chew your way through, and it's really, really hard to shoot if you can shoot it. And initiates are definitely a part of that problem, where because they're already, even if they weren't shield guards, they'd be great models, and you'd see them run in a lot of lists. And the fact that they are incidentally shield guards, and I mean, okay, any list that wants to be able to play into Menoth not only needs to bring a high saturation of magical guns, but also needs to bring enough valuable guns that they can both kill armor 21 infantry and have bring enough volume that once you're done using up all my shield guards, you can still kill the things that they're protecting. And that's a problem because it leads into this sort of arms race that we saw in stuff like the Trollblood CID, where like the initial rules for Gunny 2, where he just ignored like blast damage is just regular damage now, so you don't need to hit the thing that you're hitting to shoot to kill it, so you can't shield guard it, so there's just this every rule is trying to outdo every other rule. Okay, you can shoot really well, but now I've got shield guards, so I can control where you shoot. Where now, okay, I can hit you really, really hard without actually hitting you with stuff like electro leaps and trick shots and the design space of like that gunny 2 feet. And we're going, okay, so now we're not working through the models that, like, we're just adding new rules that beat the old rules, and that sort of design creep is kind of problematic. And I don't want to reduce it to it's just power creep, because it's not. There's this limitation of design that exists fundamentally when you have like lists that can shoot really well, and you need to have lists that can shoot really well, or else we'll never play guns, and it'll just always be two melee armies that run screaming at each other.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a really complicated situation.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I guess I remember playing Signar lists that would have like, and granted this was more in like Mark II. But Signar lists where you would have like a storm wall, and it was pretty good at shooting, but it wasn't like it was kind of a combined arms list. It wasn't by any means like a fully dedicated list, and it just feels like that's not something that is really viable right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me a little bit sad, but I guess it just kind of is what it is. If Privateer Press could go back in time and have perfect knowledge, I guess I'd be kind of curious if they would decide to make the initiates again. But there's really they have kind of had the philosophy of we don't want to sell a bunch of models and then have them become useless or whatever, and and so it's, once the cat is out of the bag, it's a little bit difficult to decide what to do from that point. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of in the camp that I don't think that the initiates are great for the game, but I don't know if the solution is worse for the game than just leaving it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So next question. This is also another one from Bennep. He says, what's missing in the other theme forces for the others to be a viable consideration?
Okay. I'm going to assume that by the others, he means Exemplar Interdiction, what's it called? Guardians of the Flame, the Temple Flame Guard one, Creator's Might. One of the things I like about Menoth is we have one real theme in Faithful Masses, and we sort of have two half themes, which are Creators and Warriors of the Faithful, the Kador Menoth hybrid one, where like there are some lists in there that can work, but not a lot. I think Creator's Might is kind of fundamentally flawed. Like I think the idea of a Warjack theme is kind of a fundamentally flawed idea, especially when we're talking about Menoth Warjacks, because Menoth Warjacks are really bad. Like just in terms of their raw stats, like their speed 4, their def 10, their armor 19, in general, and their mat, a lot of them are mat 6. So you need to bring, if you're going to play Warjacks, you need to bring other stuff that makes them good. And like, if you want to play Warjacks, you should really just be playing Faithful Masses, because that gives you a theme benefit that makes your Warjacks good. Whereas like Creator's Might doesn't really do anything to make your Warjacks good. Like the best thing about it is you can take two Menite Archons and two Exemplar Warders and have that combination of really, really high defense models that are also really hard to kill running around. So that's my thought on Creator's Might. I think that it needs something like, for example, the Krix. In Krix, we had our Bane, or not our Bane theme, our Thrall theme and our Warjack theme rolled together. Which I think is something they might want to consider. Exemplar and Flame Guard are both kind of suffering from the fact that they're paper themes in a meta filled with scissors. Like, they're themes that in general want to bring a bunch of infantry that are relatively easy to kill into a meta that is really, really good at killing living infantry. Though I do think there's Exemplar is definitely better off than Flame Guard. Like, Flame Guard, a lot of the models are just objectively bad. Like, I went back a while ago and read, like, Daughters of the Flame. Those models are appallingly bad. I think they're like 11 points for 6 models. They're mat 6. And they have, I think they might have, no, they don't have Gang. They have CMA on half-inch melee ranges, I think. It's they're models that haven't been kept up to the things that single wound infantry need to be able to do in the modern metagame to be relevant. Exemplar has a little bit less than that because they've received some love relatively recently, but they're also, like, a lot of their models are slow and they're easy to control in a way that models in Faithful Masses just aren't. That's not really the question they asked me. What do they need? So Flame Guard need better rules, fundamentally. Like, some support solos would also be nice, but really, like, their baseline, the models that you bring with them, like the Temple Flame Guard and the Daughters of the Flame, just need to be better. The Exemplars, I think, just need a little bit of a nudge. And that nudge, I would almost prefer to see it come from other things in the meta being tuned down. Like, if Legion of the Lost Souls get a little worse, Exemplars get better. If Void Archons get a little worse, Exemplars get better. If all of the stuff that preys, I guess, Death Archons now, because those prey on living infantry really, really well as well. And Deny Souls, which the Exemplar theme has a soul economy in it. Yeah. And then Creator's Might, I just think it needs to be more of a combined arms list. It needs to have, like if it would be super busted, but as a really obvious example, if you could take Initiates in Creator's Might, suddenly it's a great theme. That would be broken and would be a terrible design choice. But if you could do something like maybe even look at putting some of the models that are in the Flame Guard theme into Creator's Might and see if that, like, because now you've got some skirmishing models and some ambushing models that can help you play on scenario. Maybe that would help them.
So you'd said that you think that your preferred solution would be to kind of tune down a few things in the meta as opposed to creep up a few other things. Do you actually think that that's a very viable solution for Privateer Press or no?
That's a hard one. So everyone hates it when their stuff gets worse and yes. Like super legitimately. And there's also the experience of if you're the one who's playing the stuff that's getting nerfed, you're probably reasonably aware of the ways that it can be beaten, even if those ways are kind of narrow. Like when Ghost Fleet was a thing, I was playing Ghost Fleet, and around the time people were really talking about nerfs to Ghost Fleet, I always felt kind of bad when people were talking about it, partially because I didn't want people to nerf my stuff. Like, I'd spent a bunch of time painting all of these stupid zombies, and I didn't want to put them back on the shelf. Spoiler alert, they went back on the shelf.
Yep.
but also, like, I'd spent this was right before the WTC, so I'd spent a couple of months just playing into everyone's Ghost Fleet drops. And so I was really aware at the time of all of the ways that Ghost Fleet could lose. And so it was a little bit harder for me to think about, like, yes, Ghost Fleet can lose. And if you bring a list that's really, really good at beating it, you can definitely beat it. But you shouldn't have to. Like, it's bad. It's bad right. Game design and meta design that I need the Ghost Fleet list and then the everything else list. And maybe your Ghost Fleet list covers a few incidental things. So it's really hard to communicate why you needed to nerf something, especially in a game like War Machine that's still a board game or a tabletop game. So we're not used to, like, if I was playing League of Legends, I'd be expecting things to get nerfed or buffed every couple of weeks. That's just how the game works. That's the normal, as opposed to the changes that we get still feel like abnormal, unusual. And so we wonder, okay, is there something I can do to, I'd rather this didn't happen. But I do feel like things are stronger is maybe the wrong word, but the stuff that's really good feels too good, in the sense that it really impacts the way that everything else can play in a way that it hasn't always done. And you really see, like one of my locals was a Circle player for a long time, and he recently switched to playing Aurora 2. And he is winning a lot more games now that he's playing Aurora 2. And he's a good player. I've played against him lots. He plays in a very strong meta, which is why he probably doesn't win as much as he wants to. I probably shouldn't talk about, I shouldn't give that anecdote.
Okay.
Yeah. What was I saying? Let's Aurora 2 and Fiona were a great example of, like, both of those casters are super, super strong. There's ways to play around them and they can lose, but they're in the same faction and they're paired with each other all the time. And, like, that's too much. Like, one of the people we're talking about before a lot of the balance changes to mercenaries came out, and we're like, what should we do about Aurora 2 Fiona? Is it too strong? And what I was thinking is, like, I think one of the best balance changes you could make would just be to take that theme away from mercs. Like, it's wild that mercs has Aurora 2 Fiona and Osram and Magnus 2 in the same group of high tier casters, because those are some of, like, were at the time probably three of the best five casters in the game, certainly three of the best 10. And so it's not necessarily a problem that, like, all of these things exist, but there's specific combinations. Like, Legion of the Lost Souls isn't maybe a problem unit on their own, but if you add in certain interactions, like, okay, that they've got Bloodbound and they can Bloodbound on Vengeance that they get from the theme, that's a problem. That's too much. So I do think that, to summarize and give a short answer after being super long-winded, there are some knobs that I think Privateer Press can turn to just bring everything back, like, to take it from 10 down to 9 in a lot of ways. And maybe that means adjusting Initiates, adjusting Legion of the Lost Souls. They've sort of done it with Infernals. I think the change that they made to Valen was a great change in terms of the health of the meta, because it took them from being this overwhelming force, and just the tactician let them recover from small mistakes super easily, which I think was the biggest thing about tactician, is you just can't trip yourself up, or you can, but it's much harder. And it just brings that back just a little bit, like, takes it from a 10 down to a 9 or an 8. And then suddenly, like, I'm not super worried about Infernals anymore. Like, they're still a hard matchup, but they're not the, like, I'm not sitting there thinking as I'm prepping for this coming VTC, like, oh gosh, what am I going to do about Amademos?
Okay. Well, the next question from Benup, he says, from the outside looking in, Tristan 2 looks a bit messy. What's your take on him? Any good lists, or does he need work?
So I actually had to look up what Tristan Durant does, which is maybe the answer to this question.
Okay.
He seems like he's a enormous kitchen sink. Like, he does a bunch of stuff, but he's not very focused. Like, he wants to bring Warjacks, but Hand of the Creator, which is a spell that he has that removes D3 damage points from each friendly faction model currently in the spellcaster's control range. Like, that's clearly geared and costed for multi-wound infantry, like Cinerators and Bastions. And he also has Invaluable Resolve, which is great for Cinerators and Bastions. But he also has Manifest Destiny, which is a Warjack thing. And he has True Sight and Field Marshal True Sight, which is wild. And I guess True Sight was probably better before the Judicator had effectively had True Sight. Or does it not do that anymore? No, it doesn't ignore stealth anymore. Okay, so you can have a True Sight Judicator. That's pretty good. But really, I would say he's flawed because he's unfocused and because he wants to bring a bunch of Warjacks. Like, his feat is all about Warjacks. But he doesn't make them go further or charge for free. And that, you kind of need that when you're playing Warjacks, unless you're also doing something else. Like, Serenia brings a similar hit and damage effect in positive charge, but it also affects infantry, and she also does a bunch of really good stuff for infantry. So I think he probably needs to trade one or two spells for something else, and his feat is weird, and I don't like it very much. Like, he wants to allocate, so he wants to run a bunch of Warjacks, which is kind of a problem. Like, that's not what Menoth wants to do.
Right.
Like, they want to bring one or two or three and really turn them up to 11. Yeah. Which kind of comes back to what I was talking about earlier with Menoth. Warjacks are kind of bad. Again, that's why we've got a bunch of ways to buff them, but you need to bring enough of those ways to buff them to make them good.
Okay. His next question is related to Durst. He says, Durst plus a bunch of heavies, meme or secret hotness?
Oh gosh, I feel like, so I maybe already answered this question.
Yeah, given your opinion on Menoth Jacks.
Menoth Warjacks are kind of bad. Like, maybe if you're bringing the Speed 5 Jacks. But, like, if you're bringing the Speed 5 Jacks, you should be bringing the Sanctifier, and the Sanctifier is only good if you're bringing infantry, and it also is really pillow-fisted, unless you're running it in Faithful Masses, which, I mean, I guess Durst probably wants to be running in Faithful Masses. He is kind of a paladin, a friend of paladins.
Yeah.
I think, again, I think there's probably potential for Durst and, like, three heavies. But Durst and a bunch of heavies seems like too much.
So next question, he says, is it racking time for Resnik, or can we easily say no Resnik, no?
Resnik 2 is a beast. I talked a lot last episode about playing him. He is not currently in my rotation, but that's mostly because I played him a bunch last year, and I'm deliberately trying to play some new stuff. But I really encourage people to try him in... I've seen some people play him in Creator's Might. I think that's interesting. I prefer him in Warriors of the Old Faith. I think he really shines there. Resnik 1 is kind of a mess. He's sort of one of those old Butcher-esque casters from Mark 2, and like a lot of those casters, who were already kind of marginal. Casters like, you know, a Butcher that wasn't Butcher 3, Terminus, Resnik, people who were going to get there eventually and were going to be pretty hard to kill as they were getting there. And then when they got there, it was going to be bad because of the changes to focus, because of the increase in the lethality of a lot of the models that people are bringing, the quality and quantity of attacks. They just don't get it done anymore. So Resnik 2, yay. Resnik 1, nay. Fingers crossed for Resnik 3. He'd be cool.
Fair enough. So here's the last question from Ben Up. He says, does Malakas creep into your competitive pairing nowadays?
I think there's potential. I haven't found a list I love with him yet. I think he's got, like the fact that he can cast Scourge for free, like any caster who's Focus 7 and can cast Scourge for free must be good. Like, that just makes you like in a faction that can bring Adjudicator, there's a certain level of good, and it's I can knock their caster down. So yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff. Like Malakas can pretty easily slot into a lot of existing lists if you just bring like Malakas, Judicator, Arknode, maybe play an Exemplar Interdiction so you can bring Severius and a Redeemer, maybe. That's kind of similar to Krios 3, where he wants to like purify off all your upkeeps and force hammer you to knock you down and then shoot you to death. But Malakas, in a similar way to Krios, has an alternate win condition, which is really important on casters that can assassinate. Like, you either need to have a really hard lock on assassination, or you need to have another way of winning the game. And Malakas can definitely, like, pick two or three hard targets on his feet turn and remove them from the table.
Mm.
So I haven't personally played him a bunch, but I think there's potential there. And I'm excited to see what comes out from it in the next couple months.
All right. So next questions are from BCCB. He says, what are your thoughts on Fiora 1, 2, and 3? What would it take to make them competitively viable, assuming you don't think they are today?
Oh, gosh. So many casters. Fiora 1, I'm pretty sure, is unplayable trash.
She's kind of been that way for a while.
She's been that way for as long as I remember, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I look at her and I see like she's got Engine of Destruction and she's got some, oh gosh, that's kind of it. She's got two nukes.
She has a bad feat.
And a really bad feat. And veteran leader for some of the worst models in the game. Wall of Fire is cool, but it would be better if it was a rock wall. Oh wow, yeah. Why does it cost 3? That's insane. Rockwall is cost 2, and it's so much better than Wall of Fire. Anyway, okay. So, gosh, what would I change for Fiora? Is that the question? What do I think?
If she's not competitive, what would make her competitive? I mean, for one, it makes like she just needs to rework from the ground up.
Yeah, rework from the like turn her into Makeda 3. Honestly, like that's what she needs. She needs a rework of that level. Like, give her insight. Give her Cyclone instead of Engine of Destruction. That'd be cool, actually. Yeah, something like that. Oh, and a new feat. And probably a new spell list. Lots of things. Fiora 2. I remember Fiora 2 being really good in Mark 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure why she isn't good now. Except, well, a lot of things have changed in the way armies are built and stuff. So she should really just have Field Marshal continuous fire. Like every weapon on all of her warjacks gains continuous fire. I don't think that would be insanely strong. Like lots of things are pretty fireproof already. Fire Step is cool, but Fiora 3 does it better. Escort is cool. Yeah, she probably I would say take Firestarter, which is her spell that used to be her bond. Turn that into a Field Marshal and replace it with a value spell, like something to work with infantry, maybe a damage buff or a hit buff. Well, if she's got fiery AoEs for a hit buff, maybe it's probably a damage buff just to help round her out. I think her feat is really neat. Fiora 3 I think is great, honestly. She's a solid B tier. Like, if Serenia, Harbinger, Vlad are A-tier Menoth casters, I think she's a solid B-tier. Banishing Ward is a really cool spell. One of my favorite, when Tridents were ruining the world, I was looking at playing Fiora 3 because you can say, when you're playing against Gareth and his Tridents, you can say Banishing Ward and no shooting on my Judicator. And then it's really, really hard for Gareth to interact with that model. Insight is really cool, and I think either Menoth or Warriors of the Old Faith gives you the tools to keep her alive, and so you can maximize its value. Redline is a great Warjack buff in Menoth. Super cool. Yeah, I like her a lot. I think she's a really solid Dark Horse. Well, yeah, Dark Horse B tier caster, someone who you're going to put her down and your opponent's going to go, oh, neat, what's she do? And then as you start to play, she's probably going to go, oh no.
Okay, well, so the next question from BCCB, he says, like most of the original factions, Protectorate seems to have a fair chunk of unit solos and even jacks that aren't played. Is that your view of the world? How confined / pigeonholed or not do you feel when building lists?
I feel a little less confined than I think most people do. When I'm thinking about Menoth, I think Menoth's like stable of casters is really, really wide. Like we've got a lot of really solid B tier casters who you can definitely play, especially if they're your off list, if you want to pair them with like something like a Harbinger or a Serenia. And a lot of those casters want something a little different than the default, like warrior or the default Faithful Masses list. Like I have a soft spot for Thyra. And if you're going to try and play Thyra with like triple initiates, solos and some jacks, like it'll probably work, but you might have a bad time and you probably do better if you bring some Idrians. So there's a little bit of flex there, but really still most of the list building in the faction happens in Faithful Masses. And I've talked already quite a bit about the problems I think exist in the other lists. So yeah, I feel kind of constrained. I would love for all of the models in my faction to be playable. I'd love for all of the models that I own to be playable. But I don't really ever expect that to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. I guess I've kind of always just had the belief or philosophy, if you're playing one of the original four factions, there's just a lot of models that you're not going to play or use or, you know, et cetera, which, mm-hmm. I mean, which is fine. I mean, they've been around for years and years and years and years.
Yeah. Like I own the entire Krix range, like full FA of everything.
Right.
And I own 30 pewter Bane Thralls and I own 30 pewter Bane Knights and they have not left their drawer for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that's very sad.
Yeah. All right, so we'll do one quick question, and then that'll end this first episode. So BCCB, my apologies. He says, who is the best Warcaster in the faction? And then he says, parenthetically, it's okay to say Vlad 3. And then he says, who is the worst? And then he says, parenthetically, it's not okay to say Vlad 3.
That's fair. The best Warcaster in the faction, I think, is Serenia.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is, a lot of this is taste, but I think like I feel so rarely that I have completely lost a game with Serenia. Like there's always something I could do, or even once the game is over, something I could have done better that would have enabled me to keep going and keep fighting with that list. Like you can, even when your army's being ripped apart, if you make a couple of clever feat moves, you can set up to turn the game around the next turn. And she's so powerful. Like Rockwall is such a cool spell, and Positive Charge is such a cool spell, and they make you think about the board in really interesting ways, and ways I think make you better as a player. Who is the worst? I'm going to need a second to look at the list of who is the worst caster in Menoth. Probably Fiora 1. Yeah, I'm gonna final answer Fiora 1.
Okay, so we will pause there. I'll remind everyone, check out discountgamesinc.com, check out Muse on Minis, and smash the subscribe button on Patreon to be able to listen to the bonus episodes. So, Gareth, thank you very much for doing this episode. I definitely appreciate it.
Pleasure as always.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.